Empowerment of the working class. This is Building Bridges. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash.
And we thank you for listening. Stay strong.
And it is 8 p.m. You're tuned to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. Time now for Housing Notebook with Scott Sommer.
And welcome to Housing Notebook here on WBAI in New York. My name is Scott Sommer. I'm with the Metropolitan Council on Housing, New York City's oldest tenant union. If you need help with a housing problem, give Met Council a call at 212-979-0611. That's 212-979-0611, Monday or Wednesday from 1:30 to 8 p.m., Tuesdays from 5:30 to 8 p.m., and Friday from 1:30 to 5 p.m., That's 212-979-0611, 212-979-0611. You can also follow us on the web at metcouncilonhousing.org. That's metcouncilonhousing.org. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all those places. You can find us. I tweet as well at Scott M. Sommer, S-C-O-T-T-M-S-O-M-M-E-R. Likewise, our radio station is on the web at WBAI.org, where you can catch all our programming and listen to us live streaming. Or if you miss a show, go back and hear us via the archive. That's WBAI.org. And why not become a member of WBAI while you are at it as well? And support this radio station, much like you support Met Council, because BAI is the only station in the New York area that would give tenants this much airtime all the time and for close to 60 years. So that's WBAI.org. Later, we'll get down and give you the upcoming rent guidelines that take effect come September. And but before I do that, let me just announce that our Tenants' Rights Summer Clinic, the next one's coming up on August 25th. It's August 25th from 5:30 to 8 p.m. We have the hotline, obviously, going, you know, 4 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, 1:30 to 8, Friday, 1:30 to 5, Tuesday, 5:30 to 8. But we have an in-person outdoor clinic during the summer. We didn't have any of those during COVID, and obviously we're still in the midst of COVID. But we will be having an outdoor Tenants' Rights Summer Clinic on the 25th from 5:30 to 8 p.m. at the Cooper Triangle Park by the Cooper Union in Manhattan, between East 6th and 7th Streets, 3rd and 4th Avenue, August 25th. If it rains, August 25th from 5:30 to 8, that's a Thursday. If it rains, it'll be the 27th from 12 to 3 p.m., that's a Saturday. And so come, please be on time, register. We all sit around together. It's a mutual aid thing, so we sit and talk and we share all our experiences and stories and also give advice to those who need help with various housing problems. So do come out and do that. And you can once again follow us on the web at metcouncilonhousing.org and also our sister site, thetenant.org. Let's see. Today was kind of a nice weather day down here in the city. A little muggy, a little humid, whatever, but the temperatures weren't too bad. It's going to start creeping up again tomorrow and the rest of the week. I know it's not the heat season, so we're not going to talk about the heating law, but it is equally important that you stay cool and hydrated. So in New York City, you know, it's going to be oppressively hot again tomorrow, and they say Thursday is going to be really bad and humid. So if you don't, you know, check on your neighbors. Check on your sisters and brothers and others in the buildings, especially those seniors, make sure they have what they need, make sure they're taking care of themselves, make sure people are hydrating. But also, if you need to get to a cooling center, if you yourself don't have air conditioning or, you know, a good breeze in your apartment, or you just feel like you need to get somewhere and cool down, cool off, you can call 311 in New York City, 311, and ask them where the nearest cooling centers are to your place. A lot of libraries are cooling centers, by the way. Or you can go to nyc.gov in New York City. That's nyc.gov, and click on the link for cooling centers, and you can find out where in your neighborhood you could go, or you could look up for somebody else if you know who needs to know where to go. But please be mindful of this heat. Also in August 23rd, is yet another election day in New York. We just have like a lot of election days in New York this year. And we have another one coming up on August 23rd. It's going to be the primaries for the New York State Senate and for Congress. And there are lots of interesting and tense races, whatever, competitive races. And we will actually probably hopefully talk about that in 2 weeks. We're off next week, but we'll be back on the 15th. And hopefully we'll talk about some of those on the 15th, some important state Senate races, some important congressional races. So make sure you vote. Make sure you get out to vote. The registration deadline has passed, but you can still get an absentee ballot. You can get one up until the day before the election. You can go in and to the Board of Elections of your county and get one. Or if you want to mail in the request, you can go to the board's website, and I'll give you that information in a second. Early voting also. We now have early voting in New York. It's a great thing to take advantage of. That starts on August 13th, and it ends on August 21st. So it ends on the Sunday before Election Day, the 23rd. So please early vote if you can, if it's convenient for you. And remember, your early voting site is not necessarily where you vote on election day. So do check that out. You should have got a mailing about it, but if you didn't, here's how you can check it out. In New York City, you can go to vote.nyc. That's easy enough to remember, vote.nyc. Or you can call 866-VOTE-NYC. That's 866-VOTE-NYC, 866-868-3692. Outside of New York City, if you want, go to elections.ny.gov, elections.ny.gov, and there you can, like, punch in your address and find, you know, where your polling place is. If you have any questions, you want to call, and you can find your early polling site. If you have questions and you're outside New York City, you can call 800-367-8683. That's 800-367-8683 is where you can call outside New York City to the State Board of Elections. And their site again is elections.ny.gov. And in the city, it is vote.nyc. That's all the pretty much the housekeeping I need to do right now. It's 8:09 in New York. It's the 1st of August. So that means for most, many of us, including me, rent is due yet again. Rent is due. It's rent day. It's the day the landlords live for. It's rent day. It's August 1st. So I can't believe it's August 1st already. Boy, but it is August 1st. So, so make sure you, if you're having trouble with your rent, of course, remember the ERAP program. The processing applications follow through the end of June. I checked the other day. So even though they may say they're out of money, whatever, you should still file anyway, because filing for an ERAP, there may be additional funds coming. Actually, Washington is starting to redistribute some of the billions that were not spent by other states. So New York may see some more money, and then hopefully New York itself will put in more money. And then, of course, there are other assistance programs. And also by filing for the ERAP, you know, it could get a delay in any eviction proceeding you may currently have pending. All right, so let us get ready and go to our guests. We have exciting news here. You know, so those of us here in New York, you know, in the city, five boroughs, you know, many of us are, fewer and fewer of us are old enough to remember when rent and eviction protections and rent regulations came in during World War II. You know, there are fewer and fewer of us left from that era. But there are those of us who like basically grew up in a city with rent control or rent stabilization or other kinds of subsidized programs which may have had some tenant protections to it. And it was mainly, you know, in New York, a New York City phenomena, some in Nassau County, some in Westchester, some in Rockland County. And then, of course, there were the smattering of rent control departments still left around. You know, like I remember when I was in college in Albany, there was some rent control tenants still in Albany. It was like it's kind of exciting. But yeah, there's fewer and fewer of that. And you know, if you remember from 2019, the great victories we had up in Albany, where the laws were extended to the extent where now cities and municipalities and towns around the state outside of the downstate ETPA counties, I guess as they call them, were able to opt in. And so we are tonight heading north to Kingston, the first capital of the state of New York, as it says when you drive by on the thruway. The first capital of the state of New York, Kingston, which is a lovely town, by the way. I've been there. I've been there quite a bit over the years. So we're heading up to Kingston, and joining us this evening, we have Alderwoman Michelle Hirsch from the 9th Ward in Kingston, and Tyler Vanderhaag, who is the Hudson Valley organizer for Citizen Action of New York. Good evening to both of you, and welcome to Housing Notebook.
Hi, Scott. Thank you for having me. Hey, Chad. Yeah. Good to see you.
And, so welcome. And I guess some big news. So last week, Kingston became the first city north of Rockland County to actually declare a housing emergency and enact the Emergency Tenant Protection Act. Alderwoman Hirsch, how did that come about? How did that happen? What was it? Didn't happen overnight.
It did not happen overnight. I took office in January of 2020, and at the time that I was campaigning for my first term in 2019, the city was in the midst of a vacancy study at that time. Rents were skyrocketing here, and the landlords of some of the larger units, larger buildings in our community, banded together and created a way to foil the occupancy vacancy study. And I took office, and we received the vacancy survey, and it was determined that we had a 6.7% vacancy rate, and we actually would need to have something under 5%. And so we did not hit the mark.
And the study is critical because you can't declare a housing emergency without it being 5% below 5%.
Yeah, under the law, you need to be able to declare under 5%. And, you know, we all know it was under 5%.
I remember because I think we actually covered it at the time because it was one of the first studies. And did they like collude to like not answer the surveys or something? Well, they pulled some shenanigans to skew the numbers.
It took a really, really long time for them all to come back. With the answers, it kept getting delayed. We got a draft copy of the survey, and they had a bunch of units that they just did not answer. So we actually got to sit down with the company that did the survey, and I even asked them, like, how did you qualify your results of the survey. How many doors did you knock? And they really didn't have a lot of answers. So, hard to to verify their results.
So then what was a new survey done, or was the data taken and what happened next?
So the mayor and our housing initiative, Mayor Noble here in Kingston, and the housing director, Bartok Stardage, sent out a new survey to landlords this past spring. And most of them answered. And we came back to find that we had a vacancy rate of 1.57%.
Well below.
Yes. And it's a little late. It's great, but it's a little late because a lot of people were displaced from Kingston, New York during COVID, and the rents just went higher and higher. We're only 90 miles north of New York City. So we became a haven for downstaters to move up and move out. Downstaters were able to come buy up our housing stock, move into our rentals. They're used to paying a lot of money. I lived in New York City myself. I had a rent stabilized apartment. So I understand how it works. I was fortunate, but for someone to come up here and buy a house or rent at the prices they were paying in New York City versus up here, it was a lot cheaper, even with the rents raised.
And what describes, and obviously this, the ETPA only applies to buildings built before 1974, six units or more, like a small apartment building at six units. How many are those in Kingston? I mean, how many units are we talking about? It's not like Brooklyn. Yeah. So.
Right. No. It's about 59 properties are in the latest study. And that so it's only about 1,270 units. So it's about 10% of the available rental units in the city of Kingston. So it's a small piece, but it will help. But
no, and it's important.
Yes.
It's important. Tyler, in the organizing around this that I know Citizen Action did, and I'm so blanking on the name of the other group. Is it Justice for All or For the All?
For the Many.
For the Many. That's right. Sorry. Apologies to them. In the organizers, what kind of stories would you hear from, people on the ground that were facing these housing issues?
Yeah, well, hearing the stories on the ground has been going long past, just this campaign, even back in 2020 when this campaign was going, and well before then. So largely all the work we do and most of the organizing in Kingston by need is done because of housing right now. You can't really have a conversation even non-politically without the housing market coming up because it was so unavoidable. I talk with people every day, about their landlords who are doing everything they can to basically force them out because they know somebody who will come in who can afford to pay more. So people have been, afraid to ask for repairs, the whole nine, anything, having their landlords just, make their lives ridiculously hard for no reason. So it was very easy to call the community to action around this bill because everyone's known how much of an issue it's been.
And Alderwoman Hirsch, what are you hearing like in your district? I mean, what's the Ninth Ward like, or the city in general in the housing stock?
Well, we have a apartment complex here in my ward that has about 60 units. And when I first took office, right as COVID was breaking, the tenants experienced an illegal lockout where the landlord turned off the electric to the main areas and the gas. And I received, frantic phone call from a new constituent and went over, met with everybody. And they knew that this study was coming. The landlords knew the study was coming. They were one of the landlords that would not respond to the original vacancy survey. And they just were harassing tenants. We lost a lot of tenants out of that building. I heard from one the other night that said they ended up moving because they were told they were going to get a 58% rent increase. I have elderly people that have lived there for 30 years that are, you know, terrified because their neighbor received a 67% increase for a one bedroom apartment. It went up to $2,000 in Kingston, New York. And it's not even a luxury building.
It's insanely out of control. There was a piece in the Washington Post over the weekend, which I recommend people read, and it talks about how the rents are going up, and like you're seeing these increases in places that, you know, 40% increases in Austin, you know, Texas, and, you know, which is, you know, it's a desirable place for a lot of people to live if you want to live in Texas, but, you know, it's and all across, and then even in smaller places, they would be shocked. It's like 30-35%. They say, hey, this is about Kingston. You know, it's like people probably think, really, in Kingston? But it's like, yeah, it's just everywhere. And let me ask you, the landlord of this complex, or landlords in general, are they local folk, or are they like the investment capital that's been buying up, you know, around the country? We have like single family homes being bought up by investor groups to rent out and stuff like that. What kind of mix of, what's the mix of the landlords in Kingston?
Well, those larger complexes were owned by one company at one point, and then they did sell them. And so rents went up again. And, you know, at the time, back in 2019, those landlords sent letters to some of those buildings and said, if you don't sign a lease now, you're looking at a 200% rent increase. It was so uncomfortable. It was just immoral.
So. Right.
Yeah, not, you know, a lot of outsiders. And then, you know, then we also have a lot of small investors, LLCs coming in and buying up homes and, you know, turning them into Airbnbs. And just with all of this stuff going on, just the amount of housing has just been decreasing, and available, affordable housing, you know, even issues with our, you know, some of our housing authority properties as well, like getting investors getting brought in. I think you have some of that going on, you know, down in New York City with the RAD conversions and things like that. So where low income tax credits are being used and people make money off the poor, and it's just not a good situation.
Mm-hmm. And Tyler, so when the organizing was going on, you said people obviously understood the importance of it, whatever. Was it hard to, I mean, 7-1's a pretty nice win, you know, like we don't have to talk about the one they lost. So, you know, 7-1's a pretty nice win. Was it hard to get people to vote yes, or were people responsive? Did they get it? I mean, did they see what was going on?
When we were making calls out to the community to let them know, so we started calling all of the tenants who would be impacted by this bill. And as soon as, you know, you would call them and tell them you're talking about housing, they're like, oh, absolutely, I'm ready to talk about this. So it was one of the easier times I've ever had really phone banking. You know, you tell somebody, hey, we have the chance to do rent stabilization. It was tell me when and where I could be. So we had a lot of success having people call the council themselves and then actually show up to the public hearing that was scheduled. There was over 25 people from the tenant side who spoke out in favor, and I think four or less, you know, from real estate. So as far as bringing the community out and, you know, communicating how important the issue was, that was definitely successful.
If you're just tuning in, it's 823 in New York. This is Housing Notebook on WBAI. My name is Scott Sommer. We're chatting with Alderwoman Michelle Hirsch from the 9th Ward in Kingston, New York, and Tyler Vanderhaag from the Citizen Action of New York, the Hudson Valley Organizing, talking about the city of Kingston just last week. Not even, I don't think it was a week ago, just like, what, 4 or 5 days ago, right?
Mm-hmm. So a special meeting. We held a special meeting to take the vote before August 1st. So because it's really critical that people not sign new leases because their rents got frozen as of, you know, last Friday.
That's what I was going to ask you, the implementation phasing, because now, like, you have to set up a rent guidelines board. Now you have to work with the division, since you're not New York City is on its own, but I think outside the city, you have to work with the Division of Housing Community Renewal. And I assume that is not going to happen like in 3 days. So,
the council has to approve the rent guideline board nominees within and get those names to Home and Community Renewal within 30 days. So, application will be going live, and we will be getting the applications and doing another special meeting to vote on those names as so that we can get them up.
And is it going to be the traditional 9-member board of 2 landlords, 2 tenant reps, and then 5 quote-unquote public members?
That is correct. And since Kingston is the only municipality in the county, which is Ulster County, we are able to have the 9 representatives from Kingston. If another municipality, hopefully, you know, opts in the future, then the board will have to be divided so that they have, each municipality will have equal representation on the board.
Mm-hmm. So that's going to go live. I assume people should keep their eye on the City of Kingston website, and people can apply for the various positions on there. And then obviously the council will screen and take action. And then they'll get appointed. And then, so you're saying rents are currently frozen now in Kingston if you're correct. In the rent stabilized unit?
That is correct. So a landlord has 120 to 90 days out before they renew a lease and they send out the lease renewal. If someone, say, has a lease renewal for September 1st and they haven't signed it yet, they shouldn't sign it because the landlord can only, they have to keep their rent the same until the rent guideline board is established and their fair market rent is established and the percentages for a 1- and 2-year lease are established, and then they can offer new leases at a high, you know, at that, those rates.
So basically anyone who is either has a lease expiring in Kingston or who might be month to month for that matter should not sign any new leases until if you're in a covered apartment.
Correct.
A building. Right.
Yeah. So we're going to be working very quickly to get the word out to every, you know, tenant in those buildings. So the tenant organizations are working really hard to put together a Know Your Rights campaign. I've asked the city to do a mailing to those apartments with our rent registration program through our buildings department and just really get everybody up to speed on what's going on.
And your mayor signed this thing like pretty quickly, right?
Yeah, the next day.
So did you know he was that supportive heading in, or has he been always supportive?
Yeah, he wanted this to pass, you know, the first time, so... they did the new study. So
are you expecting, are we expecting landlords to challenge in court? I mean, even if they have no base, are they going to try any noise of real estate groups potentially challenging this law?
I mean, they do, right? Like, so it was really important to me that I went through the state statute myself to make sure we were doing everything possible and doing it right and crossing every I and, you know, like dotting every I, crossing every T to make sure that we were covered in doing our side of things.
Correct. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, if I'm not mistaken, Kingston also has good cause eviction.
Yes, we do. I don't know how long.
Right. But obviously, like what happened up in Albany, but So Kingston passed good cause eviction, and that was, I guess, over a year ago they did that, right? Around, when was that?
No, just actually in January of this year.
Oh, January, okay. It's the year's going by. So
we're in the same judicial district as Albany, and so technically if Albany, you know, they would have to appeal, and I'm hearing that they're not going to appeal.
They're not going to appeal from the trial court decision?
I think that they still want to... from what I've heard, they're really trying to push this at the state level. So,
yes,
I think that what also needs to happen, if possible, is find a way to make, you know, the ETPA available or a new statute put in place for buildings built after 1974 or smaller buildings.
Right.
So that we don't get into preemption issues at the state level between, you know, municipalities and states.
Mm-hmm. Did the landlords sue or challenge your good cause law was not challenged by real estate?
Not yet. Told that they're filing something.
Okay. And what has since, you know, under that...
I don't believe our court has even seen someone come forward yet with our city court. Uh-huh. Come forward and try to use that because of, like you were mentioning before, the ERAP is protecting and staying a lot of evictions. So if you filed for ERAP and you haven't even gotten money, you've gotten an automatic stay on an eviction.
Right. So I'll have to see.
And it's all backed up a couple years. So, yeah.
Yeah. So I'll have to see how that all develops. So you mentioned the public housing in Kingston. You know, just switching gears a little bit, because the public housing tenants, they actually have rights, you know, for on how their rent is set and about renewals and regulations or whatever. You know, and obviously there's a lot going on. Unfortunately, the Joe Manchin, Chuck Schumer deal that just is supposedly coming out of Washington, we'll see, did not include any of the money that Build Back Better had for public housing. What is the current state of, you know, the housing stock, the public housing stock in Kingston? Is it in need of a lot of a capital repair work, like
it's
here in the city?
Drastic need. It's been underfunded, or it maybe have been funded, but it's been not priority. Let's put it that way.
Right.
And, I know a lot of communities across the country, because HUD has historically underfunded HUD and public housing, right? And they've taken their ARPA money and just dumped it into one bucket of, you know, public housing. And so then there's not a lot of reporting out for the, you know, to the government for various grants. And, you know, they're using it for housing because those are people that were severely impacted by COVID. And that is an acceptable use.
Mm-hmm. So it's not getting used for like capital funding and stuff that's needed for repairs.
Right. Yeah. Some communities are doing it, but I would like to see that happen here.
Mm-hmm. And on the county level, is the county, the Ulster County, do they get involved in all trying to support the housing in Kingston, or are they more hands off and like that's the city's problem?
No, they are. They are putting together a couple of projects. They are opening another homeless shelter, which will not be open for another year. You know, I find it frustrating. I feel like we're taking people from one area and upping their rent and then moving in them to some other housing unit, and everybody else, you know, makes money on it. And these poor people don't have homes, or, you know.
Right. It's a whole industry that adversely impacts health outcomes, educational outcomes for children or whatever. I mean, across the yard, you know, across the, you know, it's like housing is like, you know, critical to, frankly, a healthy life.
It's why I ran for office. I work for New York State Office of Mental Health Program to stabilize families with children ages 0 to 21 with mental health issues. And the biggest issue I was seeing with families was trying to find them apartments or housing here in the city. And you can't stabilize a family if they don't have housing. Mm-hmm. And spending a lot of time sitting with them in DFS and seeing them go into emergency shelters.
Is this your first term?
Second.
Oh, your second term.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you like it?
I like it. It's frustrating, but I hate politics. But at the end of the day, I know that my constituents and other people outside of my ward appreciate and recognize the work that I do on their behalf. So when I went into it, you know, I wasn't connected to real estate. I wasn't connected to developers. And I thought, well, I don't know how, you know, my social worker background, how much impact will I have? And then COVID broke out. And I personally had COVID and was trying to, you know, get a eviction moratorium going here in Kingston before the state passed one. So it's really important.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you're doing good work. And definitely, obviously, you and your colleagues and the folks from For the Many and Citizen Action did great work in getting the ETPA passed in in Kingston. We actually hope that it's not the last. I know that I think it was Rochester, like, refused to do a vacancy survey or something. I think they lost the vote to do that.
Yeah. And then Austining, too, you know, they did pass it. They did pass EPTA, and then it got reversed, too.
And they're in a county where you can pass it because they're in Westchester.
Right, exactly.
So.
The real estate market is very tightly controlled by big money. So
yes, and bigger money. It's become an even bigger problem. Mm-hmm. Well, we're gonna stay on top of this. You guys should let us know as things develop, like when you have your new rent guidelines board. Maybe we'll have your tenant reps on, and maybe we'll have like a little thing on the air. Your tenant reps can talk with the New York City tenant reps, and like we can have a little on air like
yeah
session together. Or yeah, you can go back and but I would recommend that you anyone who's applying for the job of your Rank Guidelines Board not go watch our Rank Guidelines Board hearings, because it's it won't encourage anyone to do it. The Rank Guidelines Board in New York City.
Just finished that process, right?
We just finished the process, and it was one of the, you know, look, Mayor de Blasio was far from perfect, but his Rank Guidelines Board did pretty good stuff, and Mayor Adams' Guideline Board, he hasn't appointed all of them. There are a bunch of holdovers there, but they adapted to the tune of their new leader, the new mayor. And it was quite a, and the surveys that were done, the housing studies that were done, all very flawed and very skewed. So hopefully those things won't happen up there, but it sounds like you have a pretty supportive city government here. So that's great. Yeah. So, well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Keep up all the good work and let us know what else is going on up there.
Yeah, and I just want to thank Tyler and everybody from the Many and, you know, Housing Justice for All and all their hard work. And we couldn't have done it without them.
So. We're gonna keep doing this. And like you said, the more we do it around the state, more likely we'll be able to even get more improvements out of Albany over time. So once again, thanks to Alderwoman Michelle Hirsch and Tyler Vanderhaag from the Hudson Valley Organizer of Citizen Action of New York. And congratulations to the folks of Kingston for pulling off this great people's victory. Take care. Be well.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. And you're tuned to Lissa's sponsor, WBAI in New York. It's 8:36 in the evening. My name is Scott Sommer. This is Housing Notebook. Let me give you those Rank guidelines. While I do that, if you want to start getting ready to call in, plenty of time for your calls. We've been taking a lot of calls lately, so why not keep doing that? The Rank guidelines. I just had that paper in my hand, and then I moved it. I want to make sure I get them right. The new ones. Oh, here they are, right under my main piece of paper. Okay, these are for the rent-stabilized apartments in New York City. And I'll give you New York City and Nassau, Westchester, and Rockland. One day soon, we'll get to announce Kingston. So these are the rent guidelines for leases commencing October 1st, 2022. Through September 30th of 2023, apartments and lofts, a one-year lease is 3.25%. Two-year lease is 5%. SROs, hotels, and rooming houses are 0%. While I'm doing that, folks want to start calling in, they can at 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. Comments, questions. We've been having some good conversation with folks about how they're doing their rents, how they're managing rent and other issues in their housing. Give us a call, 212-209-2877. Once again, New York City apartments and lofts, 1 year, 3.25%. 2 years, 5%. SROs, hotels, rooming houses, no increase. Nassau, 1 year, 2%. 2 years, 3.5%. Westchester, 1 year, 2%. 2 years, 3%. Rockland, 1 year, 0.5%. 2 years, 0.75%. So 212-209-2877 is the number to call. Comments or questions, need help with a housing problem. And, of course, once we see that there are some calls coming in, we will go to the phone, 212-209-2877. We're not with you next week. We're off next week. Back on the 15th here on Housing Notebook on WBAI. I mentioned the housing clinic. And let's see here. I know I had some stuff I wanted to talk to you about. Keep my papers more organized. I do a better job here on the air. Okay, here we go. You know, we've been talking about the funding out of Washington. The funding out of Washington bills, because they're working on next year's budget. And the House passed their bill for the transportation, the housing, and the urban development and related agencies program. The Senate released their bill the other day, their draft spending bill. They released that on the 28th. And they would include $70 billion for HUD, an increase of $4.3 billion over the currently enacted levels, but $3 billion less than the House bill, and $1.9 billion less than the amount proposed by President Biden. So they are coming in at the low end. You know, the process is the House passes a bill, the Senate passes a bill, then they go and try to work it all out, which means they just figure out what does Joe Manchin want to do. Then the Senate bill provide $30 billion for housing choice vouchers, an increase of $2.8 billion over last year's funding, which would renew all existing contracts given current data. However, it is much less than what is being asked for by the president or the House. The president would provide an additional 140,000. No, the House would provide the additional 140,000 households with rental assistance, and President Biden would expand it to 200,000 households more with rental assistance. It doesn't look like the Senate bill would expand rental assistance to about 5,000 additional households, not much at all. Public housing, which we were just talking about with our guest, the Public Housing Operating Fund, $5.06 billion, Section 202 elderly programs, $1 billion, fair housing programs, $85 million, will receive level funding compared to this year. That means no increase. So we still got work to do, folks, and there's a lot of time between now and when they get this done, because they won't get it done in time for October. In fact, it could fall over into next year's Congress, because if they don't get them by October, they will punt it all. They'll punt it all, and they will pass what's called a continuing resolution, which means then they'll punt it to the new Congress after the elections, which is why the elections will be critical as to who's in control of the House and the Senate. So we want to be pushing for $32 billion for the tenant-based rental assistance, like Section 8, so we can add an additional 200,000 vouchers, $5 billion for the Public Housing Capital Fund, because for the much-needed capital repairs we were just talking about, $5.6 billion for the Public Housing Operating Fund, $100 million for legal assistance to prevent evictions. That's critical, right? Keeping people in their homes, not making them homeless. And $300 million for competitive tribal housing programs targeted to Native American nations with the greatest needs. So please, we'll keep staying on top of this and hope you will as well. 212-209-2877 is the number to call if you want to have a comment or question, whatever. And I think we got a bunch coming in, so let's go to the first call. Hello, you're on Housing Notebook.
Hello, Scott.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I called you a couple of weeks ago about my apartment being too cold.
Okay, can you get a little closer to your phone, or if you're on speaker, take it off speaker?
I called you a couple of weeks ago about my apartment being too cold.
Okay, yeah, and? Right, what happened since?
Well, I hired a lawyer and got a note from my doctor, and it relocated me until summer's over. So,
relocated you in the building to another apartment?
Yeah, another place in Lower East Side.
Oh, okay, is that good? Is the place good? You like it?
Well, it's only temporary. But the sad thing about this is, Scott, I asked the AI to represent me, and you didn't want to do it, but I paid $5,000 for this lawyer. I could have donated $5,000 to the station if you would have taken the case. That's bad.
I can't take the case. Well, hopefully, and are they going to fix it? Are they going to figure out what's going on with your apartment and fix it?
No, they just want to shut the... when the weather starts getting cold, I'm going back. I can't take the freezing cold there.
Okay.
And we should go to Cuba, Tommy.
All right, I will. Okay. Let's take the next call. Hello, you're on Housing Notebook. Hello, is the caller there? Hello? Hi, hello?
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
I am. Oh, good.
Yeah.
This is the first time I'm listening to your show.
Thank you.
And I'm a New Yorker, but I'm transplanted to Texas. I don't have an apartment issue, but I have a housing issue. My mortgage company is trying to push me out of my house. I've been here for 22 years. I need some guidance on how to address this issue. I'm a senior citizen and a veteran.
In Texas?
Veteran. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm not the person you should be talking to. I don't, first of all, we're mainly a radio show for tenants, and you're a homeowner, which is great. But, but also I don't know what all the various laws are in Texas. I don't even want to go near there. So probably best for you to find someone local in Texas who might be able to give you some advice on whatever your current situation is. Are you up to date on your mortgage, or are you behind?
No, I'm not behind on my mortgage. They're just trying to push me at my home, and you know, like.
Don't you own it? Don't you own it? You have the. Isn't it yours?
Yes, I've been here 22 years, but they have a lot of senior citizens that they're trying to push out of their houses. The housing market has skyrocketed.
No, I understand that, but like, I understand. But who's trying to push you out? You own the house,
mortgage
right?
Company. New mortgage company. New one. My mortgage was sold to a new. Mortgage.
Okay, but you're making your payment every month, right?
Yeah, but they want to increase my payment. I'm on a fixed payment.
Based on what?
Based on Social Security.
And so your mortgage payment is keyed into what your income is?
No, I went through the whole program a couple of years ago when my husband died to
right.
get it reduced.
Okay.
And I got the interest reduced where I can manage it, but now this new mortgage company wants to increase it, and I live on a fixed income, and I can't
right.
afford it. I'm just
okay. And what's there? And you probably should consult with. You said you're a veteran.
Yes.
Okay, and you might want to. And you're a senior.
Yes, I'm a senior, 74.
Okay. Oh, sound great. What part of Texas are you in?
I'm in Houston, Texas.
Houston. All right. So you may want to, I don't know if there's like a local, I know the structure of the Houston government, if it's, you know, city council, whatever. You might want to touch base with, you know, the Department for the Aging or something, if they have that in Houston, or,
okay.
you know, the city council people and tell them what's going on. Cause I bet you're probably not the only senior or veteran who these mortgage companies are trying to do this to. You know, you might want to reach out to if there's a legal services, they call them legal services for the elderly. You know, you might want to reach out to them, to a local legal services, a legal aid program, and explain to them what's happening here. And maybe then, you know, you can get some assistance and help on that. Okay? I would start there.
That's good information. Thank you, because I didn't know what to do. Thank you so
okay.
much.
All right. Good luck. Okay.
Okay. This is your program. Love it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's take another call here on Housing Notebook. Hello. You're on WBAI. Hello?
Hello, this is
Hello?
Alex Weaven. Can you hear me?
Yeah, just get a little closer to your phone, okay? Thanks.
Yeah, hi, this is Alex Weaven. I
have... am I on a speaker? Are you on speaker?
No, I'm not on a speaker.
Okay, now you're much better. You stay like that. Okay, how's it going?
So, the full disclosure, I am a constituent of Michelle Hirsch's. And for 25 years, I was the attorney for the Kingston Housing Authority.
Okay.
And I think it's worth noting to the public that since the Pataki administration, Governor Pataki was our governor in the 90s,
yep.
The housing authorities in the state of New York have systematically been deprived of what was, we believe, our contractual right to receive subsidies from the state, operating subsidies from the state of New York. The result of that cut, total cut, of all operating subsidies was that since housing authorities traditionally at a loss because our rents are restricted, the loss of subsidies first by the state of New York and then subsequently by the federal government after the Democratic administration took effect, have deprived the housing authorities of their ability to maintain their buildings.
No, of course. No, I would say it goes back even further to like when Reagan became president and started gutting the HUD budget, which also affected public housing. So it goes back even further than Pataki. You know, it's on the state level.
The first cut in our subsidies that was noticeable in the state of New York was during the Pataki administration, and I'm not picking on Governor Pataki because the Democrats were equally at fault in failing to understand the necessity of maintaining the housing authority buildings. The subsidies are not, while we characterize them as operating subsidies, of course they really affect the ability of the housing authorities to maintain their buildings. After
right.
the cut by the Pataki administration, and again, it's not a matter of Republican or Democratic politics, many of the public housing authorities in the state of New York simply went out of business.
Mm-hmm.
Kingston Housing Authority, which was well managed, extraordinarily well managed to survive, maintaining both our state and federal units, but at a cost. And I think the things, the items that Michelle Hirsch mentioned tonight were, you know, the deterioration of the buildings. Without money, maintenance of buildings requires money. And if you don't have that money in both subsidies and capital costs, the result is inevitable. And
I don't think she would disagree with you.
No, I'm sure she would. No, I am a constituent of hers and a strong supporter of hers, and I'm calling really to reiterate the points that Michelle made.
Yes. You're right in making the larger point. It's affected public housing authorities throughout the entire country, both on the federal and state and local level. And it's horrifying. And that's why we need this money from Washington. And, you know, I think Albany may have put a chunk back in this year. But
the systematic deprivation of funds.
Absolutely.
The city of Kingston, the housing authority of the city of Kingston, houses probably 15%. 15% of the population. We have nearly 500 units under housing, including single one-bedroom, two-bedroom, three-bedroom units. Probably 15% of the population of the city has an authority building. And that's not just authority for public housing. We also bought during the fat years, and I know this may be an odd thing to say, one of the best things that ever happened to us was Governor Cuomo, former Governor Cuomo, being the head of HUD, who allowed us funds that allowed us to purchase a private housing unit, which we've maintained for 25 years now, almost 25 years.
That's good. Anyway, thank you. I'm having a little trouble with your connection, but I also want to get on to some other callers before we go, but I appreciate you calling. It was a lot of good information. Thank you.
That the failure of the government to fund these buildings is critical to the housing.
I agree. Thank you. Be well. Keep listening. Let's take a next call. Hello, you're on Housing Notebook.
Hello there.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah. I'm here in Brooklyn. I've got a landlord who refuses to do his little, you know, minimal part of my ERAP application. So, of course, it leaves that application open, like in a limbo state. They're not processing the application, and I'm just wondering if you have any idea, like, how long this can go on. Like, my landlord is refusing to take part, and, you know, in the meantime, he can't evict me because of the open application.
Well, what stuff is he refusing to do?
Just whatever his part is. It's like the most basic, like, info. Like, he's supposed to just give them, like, some real minimal info about, like, prove that he is the landlord, and then give him like his checking account info, so that if I was awarded the money, then they deposit it right there to him. It's like it's hardly anything at all, but he, you know, it comes with those two rules where they're not allowed to try to evict you for 12 months afterwards, and they're not allowed to raise your rent for 12 months afterwards. But still, he won't speak to me openly about why he's still against ERAP. He avoids my questions. He won't talk about it. He won't explain it to me. And it seems to me that he's willing to do this forever. Does anyone know how long they're going to, you know?
Well, but then he won't be able to sue you for the money.
I know.
Kind of crazy on his part. This is money for him, not for you.
I'm trying to figure out if anyone knows, you know, how long ERAP is willing to keep me from being evicted. Like, how long is that legal status going to stay?
I don't want to speak definitively, but I believe it's for at least, if he brings anything against you within a year after his refusal, he can't, like, proceed. I think you. What borough are you in?
No, I mean, I'm in Brooklyn. What I'm asking is, you know, if as long as he keeps this up, where he doesn't take part in the application, then he simultaneously cannot evict me, But I'm wondering how long will that status protect me? I mean, can that, like, is ERAP going to remain an office or organization?
Well, I mean, the program exists. I mean, and if he's like, if your applications are getting processed because the landlord's refusing to, you know, participate in the process, then he can't turn around and evict you for the money you know, for the time period that you're trying to cover through the money. So it's, you know, and you can get up to 15 months, you know, 12 going back and three going forward. Yeah. So the logic baffles me because it's money for the landlord, but there are some crazy landlords out there when it comes to this stuff. You know, I would, you know, but yeah, also I believe that the state's supposed to have an obligation if they could get the information otherwise that they should be able to get that. Like, I mean, you know, there are public records. How big a building is this? I have like another minute. I got to go. How big a building is this?
What is it? 14 units.
Okay, so it's got to be a registered multiple dwelling. So, I mean, there should be city.
The state's not willing to do anything.
Okay, but you can get copies of these things yourself. Or you can get some help to get copies of these things to supply to the state that shows that. I'm sorry. I you got to let me finish because I have to sign off for the next show, but I'll at least leave you with a little information. You can actually get copies of this information yourself through the city's website and supply that to the ERAP folks.
They won't accept it from me. It has to come from the landlord.
Well, then if it's a copy of a government record, it should be good enough for them. If the building is registered with the multiple dwelling and who it's registered at, that should be good enough for them. And the deed should be good enough for them. And these are all things, I'm telling you, these are all things that if you're having problems with ERAP, then maybe you should contact your local state legislator. I don't know which part of Brooklyn you live in. Which part of Brooklyn do you live in?
Bed-Stuy.
Okay. So I know that's Annette Robinson's office, the state assemblywoman. Or I don't know who the state senator is. I don't know if it's Zelna or Myrie. I'm not positive of that. But, you know, you might want to have your state legislators work with, you know, get them the information, work with them to help liaise to the Department of Social Services, or whether it's called Office of Temporary Disability Assistance, or, you know, to get this information to them so that they can process this stuff because you're being stymied by your landlord. But I do have to run for the next show.
Okay.
If you want, give me okay. Check out with the legal aid office, the legal services in your area as well for more details. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye. All right, and we are done. We are done for tonight. We'll be back in 2 weeks. We're off next week. So if you need help with a housing problem, give my council a call 212-979-0611. That's 212-979-0611. See you in 2 weeks. Stay well. Be well. Take care. Take it away, Max.
I'm gonna tell you a story about the house that blew. I had a good job showing up for 5 long years. Lord have mercy. The old landlady was so lovey-dovey for 5 long years. She was so nice and kind in every way. Every Friday evening I come home with my paycheck, she'll smile. She was so lovey-dovey. My meal's on time. My bath water be ready. Everything be ready. It rocked on. One Friday evening I come home. I said, landlady. She said, what, Johnny? I done lost my job. She said, what? I done lost my job. And I began to notice then, when I come home in the evening time, she wouldn't smile, acting all sad, acting what's wrong, so I ain't feeling good. I said, Lord, have mercy. It rocked on. One Friday evening I come in, she said, where you been? I've been looking for a job. I said, you ain't been trying to find no job. I said, yes, I am. And she told me, the other evening she passed by, she saw me on the corner, leaning against a post. I said, I guess my feet was tired and walking all day. I'm tired, I just can't find no job.
She said, yeah. She
said, I want my ring. Hi, this is Doug Wood from Green Street, heard every Tuesday morning here on WBAI. At most radio stations, the focus is on advertising, ratings, and profits. Here at WBAI, the focus is on people and issues. We don't have advertisers, and while that provides us with editorial freedom, it also means we depend on your financial support to stay on the air. Please join Patty and me by becoming a member of WBAI, ensuring this station's future and your 24/7 access to the